G'day friends and welcome to Happy Days. This is your pal Jesse Drachman on the mic, welcoming you for another exciting episode, proudly brought to you by my very own Freak Productions. Check out my novels and comic books and all my creative works at www.freekproductions.com. Support the cause, it's a good one, and I've been busy over the last 2 years and I ain't stopping anytime soon, so get on there and check it out, buy some books, and I promise you a good time. Now, on with the show. This week is one for the ages, and I say this every week, but this one is especially one for the ages. If you haven't seen the movie The Warriors, or you haven't seen the movie The Thing, then I strongly urge you to check them both out, okay? The Warriors, 1979, Walter Hill classic, is just, I'll have to do an episode about this one day. I promise you I will, but this one is very, very close to my heart. Has Two is John Carpenter's The Thing from 1982. These two movies are incredible. And the reason I bring them up is because this week's guest is an actor that appeared in not one, but both of these films. I'm talking about Thomas G. Waits. An amazing human, a very passionate gentleman, well-spoken, very, very articulate in his thoughts, and wears his heart on his sleeve. And he's been blessed to appear in both of these films, and, you know, forever etched in time. And he talks about these films very passionately. But he's done so much more since. He's appeared in TV shows and movies, TV shows like Miami Vice, NYPD Blue, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Law and Order, The Punisher. He's appeared in so many movies with incredible actors. He's worked with Oliver Stone as well. He's appeared in the movie And Justice for All with Al Pacino. He's an actor of the stage and theater. He's worked with incredible talent. He's also even been on stage with Debbie Harry. That's saying something. He is a great guy to talk to, and we get into talking about his upcoming feature film, a movie called Target, which he is the writer and director for this film. And this is something that he created over the pandemic period. It's quite an interesting film that he talks about, and we get into it. But we also talk about, you know, his love of the fans. He's very, very passionate about the fans. But we also talk about the unfortunate circumstances in the Ukraine as well. Which, you know, take a bit of an emotional turn, and, you know, you can tell that this guy is very, you know, very passionate about a good cause, and he gets right into it as well. We also discuss, you know, what his inspiration was going into creating Target, and why this is a movie that you should all get behind and support. So, I'm very excited about this episode. This one really means a lot to me, and I hope that you all check it out. Do me a favor, hit the subscribe button, because as you can probably tell, every week I speak to someone very interesting, and you know, we have some inspiring tales to share together. And my chat with Thomas Waits is truly inspiring, and it's a wonderful chat, and I hope you can share it with all your friends and show some love. Without further ado, let's get into Happy Days with Thomas G. Waits, proudly brought to you by Freak Productions. Yeah, it's up the top.
Well, I'd love to go there.
Oh, we'd love to have you here, mate. I know there's probably more than a few people that would be happy to see you, mate.
Yeah, the Warriors fans over there, I hear, are really ready to rave.
Oh, man, I just did a convention on the weekend, actually, where I showcased my comic books and that, and did a panel talk. And
I saw a few Warriors fans in attendance there, and yeah, the fanfare is alive and well, mate.
Yeah, I love our fans. We're so lucky to have them, and every place I go, you know, they come up to me. And I also have a lot of fans from the Thing as well. I'm very fortunate to have two cult films. Yeah, just lucked out. Listen, there are a lot of actors who have done way better than I have, but not many have been in two cult films.
Yeah, that's the one thing that really intrigued me with you is that the very few people can boast that kind of claim. That must be, I don't know, there must be something rewarding inside you about that.
I don't mean to boast. Please don't.
No, go for it.
It's just dumb luck. You know, I'm very fortunate. You know, I feel like I was born under a lucky star or something. You know, my whole life has sort of been like that.
It's an incredible tale I'd love to get into with you if that's okay. Like, I mean, it's incredible that you've brought up the Warriors straight away. I was kind of holding off and wanting to talk about that, but right off the bat, you seem like a very proud man to talk about, especially the fans, you know, like I think that's such a powerful, part of what we do is the fans, you know, and the fact that you recognize that, I think that's really noble.
Yeah, I mean, and they're really observant, and for both films, they're observant to detail, and 90% of my fans are all men.
Well, that's wild. Eh?
Yeah, for a heterosexual man, it's great. Occasionally I'll get a young woman whose dad was into sci-fi or was into the Warriors. Occasionally, and that's nice, but it's mostly men.
It's pretty cool, man. What about like little things like for you wearing the vest again? On the last subway ride home.
Oh yeah,
I love that video so much. That was such a beautiful, beautiful video.
The only video that got more hits than that was the Pope's visit to the United States.
That's crazy, man.
Is that wild?
That is insanely wild. I mean, I think that just shows you the magnitude of how important this film is to so many people. And the fact that you're part of that is, I don't know, man. I think that's beautiful. I really.
Yeah, it's cool. But I mean, thank you. Thank you. It's really, I guess you have to say it's a testament to Walter Hill's vision. You know, he had this vision, and it was quite stark and futuristic, you know, and, you know, and he got lucky too, and good for him, you know. Sometimes you do films, you know, he had done The Driver right before it, and unfortunately it wasn't well received. A good film, you know, Ryan O'Neill is very good in it. But, you know, Walter had that pressure on him of his most recent film not doing well at the box office. And then here he is in the middle of shooting. And then he hires a pain in the ass like me to direct, to act. And, you know, I didn't make his life easy, I can tell you that. And so he fired me. And as well he should. You know, I've talked about this openly and honestly. And. You know, I was involved in the abuse of substances at the time, eh? Many of us were. You know, it was late 70s, you know.
I guess it's part of the culture, right?
It was then. It was then. It was a very different sensibility than it is now. You know, then you could get away with murder. And I just pushed everything too far, like I always do, and... You know, but Walter had it in his heart to forgive me, which is what makes him a beautiful man.
I think that's beautiful. And one question I did want to ask you in relation to that is, do you find, there's been recent anniversary celebrations of the movie, but do you think like around potentially the next round of anniversary for the Warriors, do you feel optimistic in the sense that, maybe with this resolution, you'll go and get your name in the credits again. Do you think that's a possibility?
I would love to do that. I don't think it is, because once a picture is locked, it's pretty hard to reopen it.
Right. Okay.
And it was a decision I made. They didn't make it. And, you know, that just goes to show you what the abuse of substances will do to you. You make bad decisions, egotistical, ego-driven, and you cause a lot of controversy, you know, which may benefit you in some way. It's never done me much good, being a pain in the ass. But I would love that. I would love to have my name put back on it.
I think with, you know, the fans behind you and the amount of love that you've received over the years for your involvement in the film, I think it would definitely sway the powers to be to do such a thing. And I know you talk about it being locked away, but I think there would be an exception to the rule.
That would be awesome. I would humble myself to ask for it. Should I ever get the chance to see Walter or Larry Gordon, the producer, again?
Yeah.
And
you know what's fascinating for me is when you talk about like getting swept up in that. I mean, I think one of the interesting things that I read that you mentioned. I'm currently reading this book about Can You Dig It? The phenomenon.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Man, it's an incredible read. I love it. I absolutely love it. Sean Egan knocked it out of the park with.
He really did.
Yeah, and I love the way he's where he talks about you and the way that you've talked about spending time in Coney Island and on the streets and really immersing yourself in the thick of it all. And I really feel like, you know, it just added to the believability of your character on screen and all the guys for that matter. But you especially, I really believed, you know, the character that you put across on camera.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think Walter says it in the interview. He says the one decision I regret, and I live with it every day, you know, is that I had to let Tom go. And I know it was hard on Tom, but it was for the best thing for the picture.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a director now too, as well, you know, and I've been in that position, you know, where I've had to let people go, and it's very painful. Even if they deserve it, it's painful for everyone, because you cast them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Nobody twisted his arm to cast me. He cast me. I was so honored. They Paramount Pictures, they could have anyone they wanted. You know,
I think, sorry to interrupt there. I think what interested me with what you talk about getting involved with the movie was the background of you at the time had the choice between the Wanderers and the Warriors. And the fact that you chose a man, you know, a film that had a director with great vision, I thought, that is just incredible. Like that's, you know, I've never heard of anything like that. And I think absolute respect of you for that. That's,
yeah, I lucked out there too. Scott Rudin, who was, you know, a big producer until a couple of years ago, he got into some kind of difficulty. I don't know what it was, but he was the king of producers at the time. Of the Warriors, he started out as merely a casting director, which is very different than being the executive producer of how many hit films and hit plays Scott has done. I don't know. But he was a friend of mine then. And I was a young kid coming up, and everybody thought I was going to be the next, you know, James Dean or whatever. And Scott took me out to dinner because he was casting both films. And he goes, you know, they're going to make you an offer tomorrow on both of these films. You're going to have to decide. And it was really quite an honor. Of course, he didn't know, nor did I, what was going to happen. It's just that thing of like your instinct, I guess. Yeah. My instinct told me Walter was the guy. And so I followed it.
Yeah. It's quite an interesting story, that how the whole movie came together, and you know, please, I don't want to focus the whole conversation about the Warriors unless you're happy to. But, you know, what interested me, especially thankfully to Sean Egan's book, is the way it talks about the way you guys discuss the amount of work that went into what you guys do, like the amount of cardio work you guys were doing, running through the night.
Oh, my God.
Talk about
run,
working for you.
Run. For you. Like athletes. Yeah, we trained like athletes, all of us. And I guess Michael Beck and I were probably in the best cardio shape. James Remar was, you know, more muscular. Although Michael Beck is still very strong, dude. Let me tell you something. He's 70 years old. He looks amazing. And do you know what I'm sure you do, like a bow that you use to hunt deer with?
Yeah.
Is like, ever try pulling one of them back?
They've got a bit of tension behind them, right?
Oh, you have to be really strong.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have strength. I couldn't, the thing wouldn't budge, and I work out every day. there's different kinds of strength. You know, Michael, he's a beautiful man, and he, you know, is very into the outdoors and hunting and all that kind of stuff, you know. And Jamie stayed fit his whole life. He became a marathon runner, and he still looks great, you know.
Yeah.
It's an actor's responsibility to take care of yourself, I think. Although some get away with letting themselves go, I think it's important if you're going to be a performer, you got to take care of yourself. You got to look good. You got to have discipline.
I think it's very much in line with mission as well. Like you have, I feel like if you want to be taken seriously in later into your career, I think you have to have a certain degree of respect and responsibility for yourself as well, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, it's funny that that I mentioned this because you're a bit of a musician yourself as well, right?
Yeah, I'm a musician, a songwriter, singer.
Yeah, man. And that had me curious about, like, you know, what came first for you, the music or acting?
Oh, acting, for sure. The only reason I ever learned to play music was because I was in Juilliard, you know, as an actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had a director from the Moscow Art Theater named Boris Tumarin. And we were doing a play by Maxim Gorky called The Lower Depths.
Right.
And I had to sing and play the guitar. And I went up to him and I said, listen, I can't sing or play the guitar. And he said, you must learn.
Wow.
So I guess I better. So I took $25 back in 1975. And I bought an Epiphone guitar that I gave to my kid brother later on.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was bad. I mean, if you wanted a party cleared, you'd ask me to play the guitar. But I kept with it, you know, like everything is perseverance. And I finally am, you know, I don't know why I have a capacity to write songs. At least I feel I do.
Yeah.
And I've written 5 of the songs in my film that I'd like to talk about.
I'm really keen to talk about this. Yeah, for sure. And I was quite fascinated by your feature film, actually. I love the story behind it. And we're talking about your feature film Target, where you're the writer and director of it. You wrote this pandemic time. And I love the whole subject matter behind it. So I'd love you to just cut loose and tell us all about it.
Well, I hope it's as good as I believe it is when I watch it, because I had a great editor, Jordan Santora, great producers, Vinny Pestarini, Alyssa Rabinowitz, and Steve Conca, an amazing sound guy named Tony Daniels. Mm-hmm. And with those people behind me, we've managed to, on very little money, put together what I think is a first-class sexual comedy.
It's fantastic.
It's the story of a guy, a very good-looking sort of 50-year-old guy that's married to a gorgeous 30-year-old model. And after 5 years of marriage, he wants to spice it up in the bedroom. So he tries to he tries to talk her into having sex with another man for his pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And she does, and the consequences are not what he expected. That's all I'll say about that. And it's funny as hell. I mean, I don't know. The few people that have seen, you know, the screenings without the colorization and the sound finished were laughing like crazy. So I think there is something.
That's a promising sign.
Yeah. It's a good time for people to have it's so deeply revealing in a certain way. And it's quirky. It's like completely off the beaten track, you know?
Yeah.
I think that it hits a niche, you know, it's sort of like Twin Peaks meets Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. That's a good analogy for it. That works. What I love also is that you mentioned with this film, the whole concept of nurture versus nature. I found that really interesting.
Yeah. And so what sparked the idea for the film was not sex at all. It was, I was listening to NPR, which is the public radio station here.
Yeah.
And they were interviewing a boy who had been raised in the foster care system here, which I'm sure you have in your country too.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, children get passed from one family to the next. And then they're let out into the, you know, stream of life with no training or skills and maybe a high school degree, maybe, and no money. And most of them, 90% of them end up in prison. And that's what sparked me. And it was the pandemic. And I had to do something with myself. We were quarantined for 90 days here in Manhattan.
Yeah.
You couldn't get anywhere. Grocery store.
Crazy. Grocery store.
Yeah. And I used the time wisely. I wrote or learned a new song every day, and I wrote two film scripts, a sequel to Target and Target. And I used that time. Mm. You know, you'll hear the music. I have three women singers singing some of my songs, which really changes the whole chemical makeup of the song and the feel of it. And it fits it so beautifully. And it's very romantic in places as well. And it also deals with male bonding and the lack thereof, and man's inability to connect with his fellow man, which I think is the source of a lot of gang violence myself.
Yeah, that's for sure. You really hit some, deep subject matter. Whilst what I find incredible is the fact that you've got these, you know, topics of interest but colored with, you know, a bit shades of comedy as well. I think that's really genius.
Thank you. I'm no genius, but let me tell you something. What's really crazy is, out of nowhere, I mean, there's a scene on the rooftop with the American flag behind the main actor, and he gives a speech about the horrors of war.
Oh, real?
About how war is the only, I can't remember it exactly, but I said something like, the only reason people start wars is to gain the courage and the bravery that they innately do not possess. And the hook of it all is that it's fake. It's just a big fake. And I had no idea, of course, that Vladimir Putin would decide to butcher children and women and pregnant women. Sorry, really.
No, it's
really upsets me. And you know, there just seems to be no recourse because of the nuclear and chemical threat, biological threat to us all. And this guy, Volodymyr Zelensky, and, you know, Sean Penn, who's a great hero of mine, going over there and doing a documentary about it. I mean, That guy has real courage, Sean Penn. You know, people can say whatever they want about him. He's a great actor, and he has great courage, and he has great social concern for everyone. There is a catastrophe. He's the first one there. New Orleans, you know, Haiti. He's down there with his core response team.
Yeah,
himself. You know, no bodyguards, no movie star. A guy. You know.
Yeah, he's one of many of the heroes of this tragic story, and you know, I've been watching the social media exploits of Vladimir Klitschko, one of the former heavyweight boxing champions of the world, who's the mayor of
I love that guy. Ukraine.
Amazing human being and very intelligent and well spoken.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, I he's fascinated me for a long time, not only as a boxer but as a thinking person. And
yes, he is.
Yeah, and just the fact that he, you know, puts himself on the line to document what's happening is absolutely incredible. So, you know, when you have people like that and Sean Penn, it's incredibly important for the rest of the world to take note and really pay attention to what's going on in the world around them.
There's a, I think it's on YouTube, Sean Penn is interviewed by Tucker Carlson, who is a right-wing Trump supporting poison in our country, frankly.
Yeah.
And Sean was willing to go on the air with him. And the guy said, "So you don't trust me. You don't even know me." And trying to lure him into a trap of getting into a petty, you know, argument. And yeah. Sean wasn't taking the bait. You know, he said, "Look, there's a lot more important things going on besides our petty political differences. There is a country's well-being at stake. There are women and children being murdered, sent to filtration camps." I mean, if this doesn't get to you, you're not, you know, I mean, does anybody remember the Holocaust?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's so true. Yeah.
What they did to the Jews was unspeakable. And yet that was before nuclear weapons. So it's far easier to look back and go, "Well, of course, I'd freaking go over there with a gun. I mean, I'm 67, but I'd do it."
Yeah.
But, I couldn't do that to my family, and they wouldn't want me anyway. But the threat of nuclear weapons and chemical and biological weapons changes the game profoundly.
I mean, yeah.
There's no getting out of that deal.
No, not at all. So I guess you just have to remain optimistic that things
will turn around. I'm a big believer in the power of prayer. Yeah. Doesn't matter what you pray to or who you pray to. You can pray to Jesus or Buddha or Confucius or the tree outside your window. It doesn't make any difference. The sun, the moon. But pray for those people. You know, they really need our... Yeah. I mean, and you know, I send them a little money. I made a collection in my acting class and sent them some money, and I'm going to try to send some more as soon as I can. Yeah.
Yeah. I did an interview the other week with a wonderful producer in LA who's played for some incredible bands, and he got together with some incredible international musicians to record a cover of Beatles' Come Together. And
really?
Yeah. And it was great. And incredible cover, and the money they raised from that was going to UNICEF to help support the Ukrainian relief fund. So, you know, like there's people out there trying to do their part to make a difference and help. So I think, you know, I tip my hat to anyone like yourself and all those people that are trying to, you know, make a difference and, you know, make some positive changes.
Yeah, well, it all begins with a thought, doesn't it? I mean,
it really does.
Julian Lennon in doing a cover of his dad's song, Imagine.
Yeah.
You know, imagine there's no countries. You know, I mean, just imagine. You know, if we were just brothers, you know, which we are anyway.
Yeah.
And it's just so sad. Oh, my God. Yeah, it just breaks my heart. And I don't think that an artist, and I think this is critically important to leave the impression, an artist cannot create his or her art without some acknowledgement of what's going on now at the present moment. There was just a shooting in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I've heard that. That's shocking.
Explosions, bombs, like what the hell, you know?
Yeah.
We've just gone so far in the opposite direction of when I was a kid, you know, the 60s and 70s. It was love and peace. And that was part of what was underneath the argument that I had with Walter, is that I thought it was, and unfortunately I was right, it was a film that condoned violence. And that wasn't the movie we agreed to make. Now, I had no business telling him what movie to make because I signed a contract.
Yeah.
But there was some logic to my madness. It wasn't like I was just some idiot. Mm. I had a different perspective on how the movie was going to turn out. It was supposed to be a love story, you know, where two people walk away from that life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it just, the violence just kept getting more and more focus. And that was, as I say, his vision, and brilliant of him to have his finger on the pulse to know it. But look at where the violence is today. I mean,
yeah, it's on that topic. You yourself and Deborah were both cast at the same time in that film. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. Debbie and I.
She's great.
I think they called us back five times, I think it's after three, they have to like pay you.
Right.
You know, I think it's like $75, but you know, they have to pay you, and they couldn't make up their mind, you know, about this one or that one and matching people up. So they kept bringing Deborah and I back into the room and, you know, trying to get a feel for our chemistry, which we definitely had chemistry as friends.
Yeah.
But we never had, you know, chemistry, that other chemistry, sexual chemistry. We didn't have that between us. But we really, I love her. I think she loves me. We're good friends. I feel like when I see her, we just pick up where we left off, you know. And I know her boyfriend. He lives in my building. And when he comes out here to work, and a lot of beautiful people I met on the Warriors. And it's done well by me, despite my trying as hard as I could to mess it up.
I think it's, it's poetic. I mean, the fact that you guys, you're all still tight. You really are a brotherhood. You've remained, you know, such close friends and everything. I think that's powerful. That really is powerful.
I'd like to leave you with something that's, I think, even more powerful. You know, I never directed a full-length feature film before. And,
yeah,
you know, who do exciting. I turn to but the great John Carpenter?
Wow.
And I would call John when I was in pre-production. I'd be like, John, I'm scared to death. He's all right, relax, Tommy. It'll be all right. This is what you got to do. And he'd give me advice, and then I'd call him from the set, and I'd be like, John, you know, I can't get my actors to do what I... And he's like, well, you got to do this. You got to... Through the whole process, he has been like, this guy, I can't say enough about him. I mean, his films, his work, his music, they speak for themselves.
Don't get me started about him. He's definitely got a lot of love worldwide for what he's achieved and created. So, and again, you know, the fact that you got to be a part of The Thing as well, like that's just such an incredible film. Like, and your character.
It really is a good film.
Yeah, and you had such a great role in that film. Like, such I really loved Windows. Great character.
I named him.
Did you really?
Yeah. So his name was Santiago.
Okay.
And then Kurt and John saw me in American Buffalo on Broadway with Al Pacino.
Wow.
And I guess they said, you know, this guy would be good in our movie. So they brought me in, and I read for this guy, Santiago. And I'm like, you know, what am I even doing here? I'm not Spanish or Puerto Rican. They changed the character's name to John Simmons. So we had 2 weeks of rehearsal. And in the rehearsal room, I was living in, you know, they brought us all to LA for the film shoot. And I picked up a pair of those green glasses on Venice Beach.
Yep.
You know, because the sun is so intense out there. And I wore them into rehearsal. And, you know, I had overheard these two African-American gentlemen one night when I was drunk out of my mind. And one of them had glasses on, and he's like, "Yo, Windows, let's go." And I thought, why is he calling him Windows? And my friend, the great actor, John Hurd, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
He looked at me and he said, "They're his glasses, idiot." And, you know, so then years later, I'm in the rehearsal room and I go, "John, I want everybody to call me Windows." And John takes a drag on his cigarette. And he looks around. He looks up at the ceiling. He's a thinking man.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Okay. All right, everybody, from now on, Tommy wants us to call him Windows." So from that point on, I was called Windows, which I find hysterically funny.
That is so cool.
So much more interesting than John Simmons. I mean, come on.
Yeah, way more interesting. But I think that kicks a big goal, man, for sure. Wow. That's gold. Tom, just quickly too, man. I mean, yeah, I could talk to you for ages about the films you've done. I mean, you've been in some incredible TV shows like Miami Vice, NYPD Blue, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and the list goes on. Is there a particular moment in your life, in your career, that you sort of, you've done some of these roles and you've just taken a moment to pause and just reflect and just give yourself a warm smile and just go, "Yeah, I've done all right.
It's very interesting that you say that. Because I have I'm a very driven person.
Yeah.
Driven by all kinds of demons and ambitions. And I don't take stock in what I've accomplished. People have accomplished far more. But the day that I worked with Al Pacino on Injustice for All, and he came up to me and he said, "Hey, kid, you really got something. Yeah, you got a beautiful talent." That was the day that I'll remember forever, because to get an endorsement from an actor of his magnitude, you can imagine
absolutely
what that did to a 23-year-old kid that was, you know, scratching it and had just been fired, scratching and clawing his way into this very difficult industry. But that was a moment where I kind of went, you know, you must be okay if you just got fired from a major motion picture and they still hired you anyway to work with Al. So I think I gave myself a pat on the back.
That's good. Yeah, good on you, man. That's poetic, man. And Thomas, I won't hold you up for too much longer, mate. I probably should let you go. But
yeah,
I'm really excited for you for Target. I think your vision for this film is wonderful. And it's a full-length feature film. Is it going to, you know, see the light of day in the foreseeable future?
We're going to aim for a theatrical release. That's our plan.
Fantastic.
Aim for a theatrical release. We're looking to partner up with the studio for distribution. And, you know, because I have a track record, you know, and some people know who I am. I have had some doors open to me that others may not, and we might get break, you know, we might get lucky. I want a theatrical release all across your great country, both Australia. I love Australian people. I love the films they make. I love New Zealand people. I love the films they make. I just think I directed a play, in point of fact, called Our Country's Good, which is about the settlement of Australia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a wonderful play. And I learned a great deal and did a great deal of research on, you know, how your country got started, you know, and the strength and the beauty of the courage of your ancestors founding that enormous continent.
Yeah.
And then turning it into, you know, democratically free and, from what I understand, gun-free country.
Yes.
Lot to be admired there.
Yeah, we certainly made some choices for the right reasons back in the day, and it's a proud country, that's for sure.
And the bravery of your men and women that have fought in the wars,
yeah,
the First and Second World Wars, and gave themselves so that you and I could sit here and, you know, play games on a podcast. They sacrificed their lives. You know, we must pause to remember all the sacrifices that Australia and New Zealand have made to the betterment of the world. And let's hope we can live up to the example, the paradigm that they set for us. Right, Jess?
100%, Thomas, 100%. And Thomas, thank you absolutely so much for your time. It's been a privilege and an honor to speak to you. And you know, there's so much more I would love to talk to you about, but you're a very busy man, and you've got amazing stories to tell. But you know what? I am optimistic that we will see Target in Australia.
And yeah.
After the convention I've just done with Supernova, I can see your film being part of that convention circuit. I really think not only Warriors fans and the Thing fans would love to see you, but I think film fans would love to see your body of work on the big screen down here. So, yeah, let's see if we can make it happen.
Let's keep me in your prayers, mate.
100%, mate. Thomas, all the best to you, mate, and look after yourself. And thank you so much for your time.
All right, thank you. Peace, love.
You too, man. Cheers.
Bye.
And that was my chat with Thomas G. Waits. Thank you so much to each and every single one of you for taking the time to listen to this chat. And a huge, huge thanks to Thomas for taking the time to share his happy days with me. That was a great chat. And if you enjoyed this chat and many others like it, thank you for checking it out. If you haven't done so already, hit the subscribe button on whatever platform you listen to this podcast. And go to it one little one step further and hit the notification bell. That way you're updated when new episodes are up. It's a weekly podcast and proudly brought to you by my very own Freak Productions. If you haven't done so already, go to www.frekproductions.com and support my creative works that I have amassed over the last 2 years during lockdown. The collection of novels, comic books, and various creative works that I've continued to forge and create, inspired by these very conversations and inspired by you. So support the cause, man. You're awesome. Thanks again for listening to Happy Days. I've been your host, Jesse. You've been awesome. And it means a lot to me that people are taking the time to listen to this show. And I hope you enjoy this episode. It really was one for the ages. And I hope you tune in next week for another great episode of Happy Days. Thanks again to Thomas G. Waits. Be sure to check out his movie Target when it's released. And follow Thomas Waits on his social media. He's a very, very awesome guy to talk to. And hopefully we'll have more conversations in the future. Till then, have yourself a happy day. And hope you've enjoyed Happy Days.